seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course, that's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course, we want to play at the weekend.
You're welcome along, friends. The 146th Open is underway in Mickelson versus Stenson last year at Troon. We had one of the great Open final Sunday finishes this year. We are at Birkdale. We're very excited. The weather is set to be no fun, although not so bad thus far, halfway through day one. The morning was no good, but it's improved since then. Fionn Davenport, you're here. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
And Nathan Murphy, hello.
Hey, Joe.
So the Open is on. Tricky enough timing for us. It's about lunchtime on the Thursday.
We're the Open is literally on we're speaking.
Try and walk that line that makes it both relevant and also listenable to even tomorrow morning, I dare say, if you're heading into work. That's the plan here.
I say with confidence that Mark O'Meara probably won't feature.
Well, that was early this morning. I didn't quite get up for the old half six. They're really trying to make this a ceremonial tee-off thing stick at the old Open. They had Monty last year.
If we were there, if we'd been given the rights, Joe, I would have forced you out of bed good and early. The first time I covered the Open, I made sure I was there to watch the opening tee shot at half six.
Who hit it then?
And, for some reason, I think it was maybe Cal Cavecchia.
Right.
Possibly playing with someone like Steve Marino. So after he had hit the opening tee shot, I instantly regretted the decision to get there at half six in the morning, realizing the play wasn't going to finish for another 14 hours.
Ouch.
Even if you were wrong that it wasn't actually those, that's an impressive recollection of two names. Marino and Cal.
Well, Steve Marino was leading going in. Now there's things that happen in golf that you forget about. Who was leading going into the final round the year Stuart Sink beat Tom Watson? Steve Marino.
Wow. Completely forgotten.
You spend so much time on the Saturday evening thinking, wow, what a breakthrough victory this could be for this journeyman.
Yeah.
No.
I watched the 1995 Open official film last night, John Daly at St Andrews and all that. And leading going into the final round was a fresh-faced Michael Campbell.
Really?
Yeah. Who nobody knew much about then. Could this Campbell have a career in the game? US Open.
The answer is no.
US Open.
Yeah, and then...
No. That's a big success. Because think how many of those videos...
I know.
You watch the guy and you never see him again. Because, and I've already forgotten his name, even though I Googled him last night. And this was very interesting. You had Tiger Woods there at... the St Andrews 95 Open, the John Daly Open as an amateur. Yeah. Mm. And you had a bloke called Gordon Sheary. Have you ever heard of Gordon Sheary? Well, Gordon Sheary at that 95 Open at St Andrews won the silver medal. He was the best amateur. He beat Tiger Woods.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that's a good little stat.
But he turned pro then and people said, this guy's amazing. Mm. And I think it's fair to say...
He wasn't.
You didn't hear
Gordon Sheary. No, my point about Campbell was that...
He actually had no success at all. He didn't...
Nothing.
He never actually won his card when he turned professional. I mean, it was complete.
Interesting.
I mean, it'd be worth talking to because I know he does a bit of after dinner stuff. Actually,
that actually is a very good idea. The thing about Campbell is that he promised so much. He was such a brilliant player, and the U.S. Open that he won was really you expected it because his talent deserved it. Mm. And then after that, he's just petered out. And
here's one for you.
Yeah.
In terms of golfers you've forgotten about did great things or almost did great things. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about this out in the office and Ger Gilroy was reminiscing about maybe watching the 98 Birkdale official film. Who did Mark O'Meara beat in the playoff to win that Open Championship?
No idea.
Not even Dave McIntyre.
Wow. Who is the font of all these things.
Wow.
Had even the slightest.
Go on.
Brian Watts.
No.
Even when I heard the name Brian Watts, I was...
I don't know.
No.
Because that was the O'Meara's second major that year. But really, it's only memorable because of Justin Rose finishing third.
I mean, as soon as he said Birkdale, I just thought of the Justin Rose chip in. Mm. That's the first thing and the only thing you think of. And the clubhouse is
kind of... asked me, was there a playoff, I would have said
no. I'd forgotten John Daly won in the playoff.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Open's on. Actually, do you know one other last thing about Gordon Sheary?
Go on.
Him and Tiger Woods had a friendly wager, and young Tiger Woods in 1995 handed over the princely sum of £1 sterling to Gordon
I now
Sheary.
Want to speak to Gordon Sheary. That's the interview.
Amazing.
Did he keep that £1?
Oh, I hope so. God, I hope so.
How much of a sense in 95 was it that this guy is going to dominate golf for the next 15 years?
Huge. Well, no, I don't know how, but there was a huge sense that he'd already won all these World Junior Championships. He was like... He was killing everything.
Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, he was a superstar already. Yeah. They were like everybody in the range was turning, looking at him. Yeah, I think there was a big sense. Yeah.
Do either of you remember 98 Live though?
No.
See, I watched.
I remember Justin Rose. I remember that being, again, that's the only thing I remember from Birkdale. That being the story and following Justin Rose and how it all went horribly wrong for so long.
And also
19 years!
That was the year because O'Meara and Tiger Woods were best friends. Remember that?
Yeah, sure.
And there was a sense of, oh, my mentor. I'm so happy for my mentor.
I remember O'Meara's Masters win far more clearly
than the Open win. Yeah.
For whatever reason. Mm. So your tweets then. Lenny Clark has a selfie of himself at Royal Birkdale. He says, Merry Christmas to me. Emmett Keane, although he
Kane.
Likes to call himself Kane for some God-known, God-forsaken, what's the phrase I'm looking for?
God-forsaken.
For some God-forsaken reason, he calls himself Kane. Emmett Keane
as
says,
his name.
Listening to At Golf Weekly pod in Moreira.
Portugal?
Moreira. Thought you'd know these things. In the quiet early morning, before the kids get up and the mania ensues, hashtag friend of the pod, hashtag no Wren for the Open.
Norin.
Norin for the
good.
Open. Oh dear.
I've heard Norin.
Put some
from
capitals.
Another source.
Put some capitals in your hashtags. These are long words.
Yeah. You know I've heard Norin. Someone else reckon said Norin's looking pretty good.
Well, I mean, he was in the Sky Sports Shot Center. We can talk about the Sky Sports coverage in a moment. But what a ball flight! Did you see Norin?
Mm.
Wow. Hooked it as a kid. A lot of kids do, I guess, to get that extra power. And he's been really working on the fade lately, and it is just a bullet. I
mean, incredibly likable guy as well.
Yeah,
like so modest.
Yeah. Ben Glover then was on the 70 at the magnificent Ballyliffin, and he reckons it's going to be a sublime setting for the Irish Open 2018. Hashtag friend of the pod. Hashtag Ballyliffin 2018. The picture certainly looked good. Mick said, oh yeah, Mick had a picture of a screaming Homer Simpson gif. Repeatedly screaming Homer Simpson, and he said, when you see at Fionn Davenport, but forget to tell him you're a friend of the pod. When will these opportunities come around again? Oh, Mick, who knows? Hang around, I would say, Georgia Street, South William Street.
Thursday afternoon.
Probably see him
a good
fairly regularly. Yeah.
Wandering down the road, muttering to myself with little bits of saliva around my mouth.
Yeah. Chris Murphy, not a bad view from the first at Hollywood Golf. And he tweeted us at Golf Weekly NT and at McIlroy Rory. So I don't know if Rory got back to you, but we did.
Mm.
Hashtag friend of the pod. I've never played Hollywood.
Oh. I've been.
Have you?
I was just there when Rory won the US Open the first time.
Oh, yeah.
So he's back at his home course, showing it off.
Yes.
Mm. Michael Hanrahan sent us, there's a lovely painting he did of the par 3 11th hole of the old course at La Hinch.
Really?
Yeah. Very nice, Michael. We liked your work. Paul O'Neill, at Golf Addict. He's actually at Golf Food Addict. Which is good. He says,
is that those, which bar then? Like, does he mean like he's addicted to golf food?
At Golf Food Addict. What is golf food? A wrap and chips.
Oh yeah, that's after the round. But I'm thinking those, you know those low sugar bars?
No, I think he means he's addicted to golf and addicted to food.
Oh, sorry. Right. Okay.
Are you sure you're reading it right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know No Wren is
No Wren. No Wren.
No Wren for the Open? No Wren.
No Wren till Brooklyn.
Tigger for the Open.
I honestly thought he had left out a T and it was No Rent for the Open. And I was trying to think, what would that mean? Look, I don't know. I got lost. Anyway, Paul O'Neill is buzzing to be at the Open. We're not there, obviously. Alan Murray, rather, played La Hinch Golf Club yesterday in perfect conditions. In great shape for the South next week. Hashtag friend of the pod. Brian Oliver, watching the Open film from 1976. What's with this British Open business? That is quite striking with the older Open films, movies. They call it the British Open. So I don't know when this the Open business started. Malachy Clarkin is certainly a man who's not happy with all these people going around mansplaining to each other that it's the Open and not the British Open. Because certainly on the TV coverage in the 70s, and I don't know when it stopped, but it was the British Open.
Dan Jenkins was tweeting about it, so Dan Jenkins covered the Open when it was both the Open Championship and the British Open.
Yeah.
And he said, for the first 20 years I covered it, it was the British Open and nobody ever had an issue with that.
Yeah.
Suddenly it went from it had to be the Open Championship to now they're specifically trying to rebrand it as the Open.
The Open, yeah. But it makes, it's so precious.
It's very, that's exactly.
It's so precious.
It's exactly the word. And interestingly, you'll have lots of American commentators, even on TV or players talking, and they will call the US Open the Open. They'll refer to that. You know, they'll say, like Brooks Koepka will be playing, and I guarantee at some stage in the next 4 days, you'll hear Butch Harmon say, there's Koepka, the Open winner.
Open winner. I mean, it's so
and we all know there's only one Open.
The Irish Open.
Sure.
Sure.
The Irish Open.
Live in 2018.
The Dubai Duty Free Irish Open.
Sorry, sponsored by Dubai Duty Free. Yeah, 1860, there was only one Open. It was the one, and that was it. And there's a whole bunch of them since. So
I think it's quite a cool branding. Like I think
it is.
I think the Open looks really nice. They have it on everything from their coffee cups to the hoardings there. But I mean, this business that if someone calls it the British Open,
someone has to correct you.
You don't love golf.
I think that's a bit much.
It's a bit of the. I remember being in Liverpool and getting walking around writing about it, and I was talking to someone, and I said, you know, Liverpool Football Club have all of this. You know, they can point to the European Cups, all their league championship wins. What do Everton have to and he goes, we would hear first.
Wow.
That's it.
Hell of an accent though.
I was just gonna say.
Yeah, we would hear
nailed
first.
It.
Yeah.
Very good.
But the way he said it, it was just like, right, that's it. You don't have to say. Yeah.
They're the people's club, Fionn.
Yeah. But and that was it. It was like Liverpool are the kind of Johnny come latelys to the original Liverpool club.
Yeah, I've only been there for about 140 years.
I know, yeah. And they were, one was founded like a couple of years after the other.
Yeah. The 1976 Open, I am presuming that's Seve at Royal Lytham. And that's why they were shown on TV. That sounds about right to me.
Well, because 76. Sky now have their 24/7 golf channel.
Yeah.
They've been showing the official films on loop, which are brilliant when you just find yourself with a spare half an hour. Listen. Considering that I was watching the 2015 one in full, and actually I watched last year's one as well, and I've little or no memory of pretty much everything that happened.
I watched last year's one as well last night, and I had forgotten that very, very short putt that Phil missed, which really swung the whole thing. And because Phil was two shots clear, and Stenson birdied, and Phil had a two-footer, and missed it, and that was the two-shot swing. And Phil was even saying himself, I lose focus on them all the time. I try not to. I really try not to. I know I do it, and I still lose focus on those short ones all the time.
Makes me like him more.
Yeah, he's amazing. Phil without a driver in the bag this week, or Bowen's carrying it, obviously. So, yeah, I think 76 was Seve at Royal Lytham. Colin Fox said, listened to the podcast Wednesday morning. Good call, Joe. And he had a picture of his bed on Padraig Harrington at the Scottish Open last week.
Ugh.
80-1. That was a heartbreaker that Saturday.
Oh, my God.
It was a particular heartbreaker because I only put the bet on Thursday morning. So if you put your bet on, say, on Wednesday, you get first 8.
Yeah.
But I only got first 5.
Oh, no.
And he was tied for 3rd with 3 others.
Right.
Which meant I didn't get the full whack.
That's terrible. That is terrible. I mean, he was really good for the 3 days and then just his putting. And the weather was terrible on the Saturday. He shot a 79. His putting was bad. But he recovered very well on the Sunday, which would give you some hope for this week. And then Patrick Flynn and a few people very happy about this, actually. Do you know what? I think I was too. Lads, the golf scientist is back. Watch out for him at the Open. Then my real tip is DJ. And then Christopher McCork. Bryson has backed up his bullshit. Great news for golf.
4 over.
It was fantastic for DeChambeau. Very emotional when he won the John Deere on Sunday night, and was saying in the interview afterwards that he'd really lost his way and decided to just go back to what he was doing at college. And lo and behold, he's now he's a winner on the PGA Tour and
amazing
doing his thing. And suddenly I'm rethinking about buying those Bryson DeChambeau clubs.
Nathan, you didn't even see this because you were watching the...
I didn't realize it was on the red button. Was it on the red button?
Oh, I was watching
the US Women's Open.
I was watching the US Women's Open. I just saw his interview.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only saw the bits afterwards on Sky Sports News the next day.
By the way, I commend Sky for showing the US Women's Open over the men's John Deere Classic. I think that's the right move. I was more interested in the US Women's Open.
Well, there was a lot going on, obviously, because Trump turned up.
Oh, yeah.
And he had his little marquee behind the 16th tee.
Yeah.
It was, well, a lot of the women were giving out afterwards about the course, which they didn't feel was good enough, and obviously about Trump overshadowing the entire thing, and again spinning around in his helicopter and lots of other helicopters having to spin around because of the security around it. But it was brilliantly exciting.
Yeah.
But that course was 2 years ago in that, you know, that silent or the secret poll that they do of PGA players. It was voted the least favourite course on the PGA Tour.
Why? I thought the
finishing
three holes, which they built, and they built the lakes in around it, so there was a whole lot of water, and Trumpet sat down was with Tom Fazio, who designed it, and they came up with this as it would be a brilliant TV spectacle.
Yeah.
And it was.
Yeah, I thought it was good on TV.
Yeah.
Must have just played well for whatever reason. Thomas Kenny then, he had a picture of the leaderboard with Harrington on it on Friday, and he said, proof if it was needed, the Celtic Tiger is back. I'm off to buy some wooden beds from the plans. #07. Or Corrigan, hi lads, on the next podcast, I'm not sure what this is about, Fionn, can we please discuss Fionn Davenport's feelings on Gregory Bordy's caddy.
Did I? I played, the first time I played in the Pro-Am, I played with Gregory Bordy up at Paul Rush.
Yeah.
And Gregory Bordy's caddy was one of the toughest guys I've ever met.
Oh, yeah. I feel like you've said this before.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's like,
in what way?
He was real kind of hard Parisian guy, like real kind of tough nut, you know, like I'd say you wouldn't cross him twice, you know. Nice fella, but
Or once,
yeah, you wouldn't.
You've said this in the past.
And that's what I thought. And so when I saw that tweet and I thought, those are my feelings.
I'm getting an intense feeling of deja vu. Here.
Which he would understand.
Bored for the second time.
Me too. Me too. I'm bored and I said it.
So Gregory Bordy's caddy is a Parisian tough man.
Yeah, a little tough nut from Paris.
He was witness to the...
He was.
Newstalk CEO smacking the shot
heard
the
around the world.
That story has travelled.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's the collective sound of 4,000 people all going, oh.
Owen Casey and one person going, ah!
Yeah.
Well, somebody was hospitalised at the Pro-Am this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Smacked straight on the head.
By James, what's his face?
Jimmy Nesbitt.
Oh, yeah. Mm. It should happen more. I listened to his Desert Island Discs recently. Not very good. John McEnroe did it this week.
Fantastic.
Does he get paid extra for that, or is that part of his 150 grand?
I'd say it's part of promoting his book.
Did you hear the piece?
Does he get 150?
So McEnroe gets the same as Claire Balding.
Oh, ouch.
Is it?
It's worth... Have you listened to the McEnroe joke?
He does 2 weeks' work.
Yeah. But so does she. And she did the Olympics on top of it.
In a weird way, though. I mean, surely the same reason that Thierry Henry earns whatever millions.
Four.
Like, yeah. John McEnroe's won X amount of Wimbledons and majors, so yeah. Claire Balding hasn't. So
do you know what? I accept that. Fair point.
Yeah. It's like us coming in going, do you know with the way we do this rugby on a Wednesday and Brian O'Driscoll gets paid this much and we get paid this much?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's exactly the same. Claire Balding's brilliant, by the way.
Yeah.
But she also works for BT.
Yeah. Did you listen to the McEnroe?
Not yet.
Oh, it's... I won't spoil it. There's moment in it that is so funny. It's... I was listening to it in podcast and it just made me burst out laughing. It's a brilliant timing. And
he's very cool dude.
He's great.
Real New Yorker.
Yeah, he's great.
I've that on the to-do list and Jarlath with Bob Geldof.
Oh.
I'm quite curious to hear Geldof.
Nothing will ever top Fionn.
On Irishmen Abroad. Can't really remember it anymore.
I tell a great story about Gregory Bordy's caddy.
Yeah. Good. Well played. So, if you're not in this part of the world, the BBC released the salaries paid to their top people. Everybody in over 150K was revealed for the first time yesterday.
I know we're golf, but just to...
Was it no one in golf featured?
No, but sure, what golf?
Yeah,
that's true. Peter Alice would have been back in the day. Ellie Barber actually starts as the BBC's main golf presenter, I guess today, or certainly at the weekend when they have full coverage. She's taken over from Hazel Irvine, so we'll see how she goes.
To go back to Wimbledon for one quick second, did you get the feeling that John McEnroe and Martina Navratilova wouldn't be the best of friends?
I didn't watch enough.
There was a little spike between them, I thought. It was all a bit kind of, yeah. I mean, in a good way, it was compelling.
I didn't see. I tell you though, Gary Lineker is overpaid. If they turned around to Gary Lineker and said, you know what, we're not giving you 1.79 million. You can have half a million.
But he's taken a massive pay cut.
He'd still do it though. He'd do it for half
a
million.
He's already taken a massive pay cut.
I know.
They docked his wages by £1 million so he could sign for BT.
He would still do it for half a million.
I agree with Joe.
But you could make that point for everybody who gets over £1 million.
I know. But you should...
Maybe he wouldn't. Maybe he would just leave the BBC completely and go full time with BT
and
NBC.
Would it hurt their ratings a jot?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it would.
On Match of the Day, what does Lineker do? He never offers an opinion. So the fact that he's a former player... You know, but my point is, like, you could say, well, McEnroe has done all this and Lineker has done all this, but McEnroe gives his opinion. Lineker just asks very bland, pre-rehearsed questions.
Yeah, Lineker's skills as an ex-player are completely untapped, untouched and unused. He's just a presenter.
Look, what I'm getting around to is, I would do it for
Joe
half a million.
Joe wants to do it.
Like, I'd love to see Mark Chapman do it.
So would I.
I think Chapman is brilliant on Match of the Day too.
So do I.
I just wonder for the BBC, for what is a prime time Saturday night slot, and it still gets... probably 5 million viewers on a good week.
Yeah.
People turn on and instantly go, it's Gary Lineker. They don't go, it's his name.
To all the golf fans listening in the US.
Is that worth 1.79 million? Are they tuning in to see Lineker?
What if Lineker is presenting the USPGA coverage next month? They've moved away from that, haven't they?
Yeah. Oh, long ago.
Ever since the Michael Vaughan incident.
Well, the Masters thing, I mean, he was cut long before that, Lineker.
Hmm.
I thought he was fine at it, but they obviously thought, no, come on. Actually, I don't know why they cut him.
Because
but they did.
Better.
Huh?
It's not that he's bad. There's just better.
I guess they went to Hazel Irvine.
Yeah.
She's very good.
To all the golf fans in the US listening to the podcast, you can wake up now.
Yeah, sorry. Let us know, by the way, how Bones does on NBC.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be weird. He's the on-course reporter.
Mm. I listened to him interviewed on Golf Digest there the other day. And obviously the big question was, are they going to have you follow Phil?
Mm.
And he said, no, we've talked about that and we feel it's too soon.
But what if Phil is contending? Somebody else goes and...
They'll have more than one on-course guy, but, yeah. But
also... If he's contending, that's the time you want Bones.
Bones, what do you think?
Yeah. What's going through
Bones,
his
what's going
head
through
now?
Mickelson's mind? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, sure, no. Well,
sure to God.
They have said, I think he said we'll get there someday, but it's a bit unfair all round to do it just yet. Alan Shipnuck was on Off the Ball last night, and I asked him, what's the deal with the split? And he seems to think that Bones' double knee surgery, even though it went well, is still the biggest issue that he's, you know, he was still limping around Erin Hills, and maybe they just felt like, is it going to get any better? And they called time on it, you know, so that's there doesn't seem to have been any great falling out. And then a final tweet or so. Owen Casey said, Joe Molloy said, golf is the worst spectator sport, but where else could you chat to the number two in the world mid-game? # friend of the pod.
But
I accept that.
But that's also because you're inside the ropes and you've got a media badge.
Correct. Yeah,
I agree, it is the worst spectator
sport. Worst spectator sport, best sport for media to cover.
Yes.
Because you get to walk down the fairway and talk to the number two player in the world.
I mean, really, was. I
whether he wants to
goose
or
pimples
not.
Walking down the middle of the fairway.
I can almost remember what we said to each other. It was that amazing. Okay, we've got much to talk about open related. We're doing that next. Okay, so let's start with what we do know. And we do know that Jordan Spieth, who this season has been 98th driving distance, 121st in driving accuracy on tour, and 36th in strokes gained putting, although he was very good in greens and regulation, he was 5th there, so his iron play has been very good. But we were unsure of what to expect from Jordan Spieth. Maybe we weren't really. He won the Travelers Championship recently, that chip out of the bunker. He's rocked up, and he's clearly in very, 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 very good form. So 3 under currently. Whether he finishes in 4 or 5 under or even 2 or 1 under. Spieth is here, and Spieth's going to be around on the Sunday. I have a clip of Spieth. He was talking when he arrived just about the course, and it's just a small clip. It's nothing that spectacular. But he is, you know, I've no way of measuring golf acumen, but even you just listen to Spieth, as young as he is, talking about how he's going to play the course, and you know that this guy's something special.
I like the golf course. It's very cool. It's a very tough but fair test. One that's demanding off the tee, and if you get that part done, then into the greens and on the greens, you could play kind of to the center of them and putt to the corners. It's one of those the greens aren't crazy. There's only a couple that have any kind of ridges to them. So it's about controlling your ball, you know, off the tee in these crosswinds to give yourself the opportunity to hit the center of the green. At this tournament, it tends to fall on half the field. You kind of cut half the field depending on a draw. It may be the easiest of the majors to win if you had to pick a major, just because the draw can take out half a field.
I mean, it's like he's been out there 40 years. That's a Harrington-esque level of understanding of everything. I watched a good chunk of Spieth this morning. He was playing with Henrik Stenson. What was very noticeable was that Spieth was aggressive off the tees.
Mm.
So on a number of occasions, there was one hole, which is usually a really long par 4, maybe the 7th or 8th. Stenson steps up and there's bunkers about 280 or so. This was downwind, 280 or so. And Stenson took the iron, you know, beautiful shot, compresses it like Stenson does and drives it down there just short of those bunkers. Spieth then took out the driver, went right over the bunkers, downwind, and was suddenly, you know, where Stenson had a 6-iron in, which is what most players would have in that hole. Spieth had a wedge in, gave himself a great birdie chance. Can't remember if he made it or not. But even Butch Harmon and the commentary team was saying, wow, yeah, I mean, that is the way to play this hole today with no crosswinds. He talked there about crosswinds, but it was straight downwind.
Yeah.
And it's just the intelligence of Spieth as he's going to manoeuvre his way around this course as much as the putting and the ball striking.
I'm fairly sure he took an iron off the first tee, which again was the right move because we mentioned Mark O'Meara took driver, first man out, puts it straight out of bounds, ends up with a quadruple bogey.
Yeah.
And he played that hole to perfection as well. He just slightly misjudged the wind maybe on his approach, left himself a little bit short of the green, but it was a regulation par. Every single thing about Spieth, you forget that He's still a week short of his 24th birthday.
It's amazing. Did you see, I was looking at the stats that the opening hole when it was 2008 played the hardest opening hole of any in major championships for the last 30 years at plus 0.51 of a shot. And yeah, so the Olympic Club in 2012 played at 0.5, plus 0.5, and then Oakmont at 0.45 last year. In comparison, the opening hole at Augusta in 2014, which played harder than it has done for 20 years, was 0.3 plus. So it's a really tough opener.
Yeah, very tough. Spieth was going to his driver a good bit. Like Dustin Johnson was saying on Sky Sports, he might hit three or four drives the whole tournament, such as the layout. But Spieth,
Phil not taking a driver.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, he went with three wood.
Spieth is a three, or Mickelson is a three wood and 2 3-irons.
Yeah.
Butch was saying there. So I think one of them is more of a one-iron type three-iron.
He's got, yeah, he's got 2 3-irons and he's brought it, well, he brought the 64-degree, which, you know, Phil would be naked without a 64-degree wedge in his bag.
The only concern for Spieth, and if we'd been recording this podcast yesterday and we were doing our preview and we did the whole one golfer,
yeah,
we probably all would have gone for Spieth again, just because you know he's going to give you some sort of a run for your money.
Yeah.
He was a little bit wild off the tee at times again, and he got away with it. Maybe, again, it was course management. He knew if this goes right, I'll be okay. I'm not going to be out of bounds. I'm not going to be a non-playable. I'll be able to get up and down from here.
Yeah.
But he is 121st off the tee. It's his first strokes gained approach from the entire PGA Tour. And it is the one worry that you'll have until the 18th on Sunday with Spieth, that there's a triple bogey in there somewhere from one erratic tee shot.
What's the rough looking like?
Well, that's an interesting point. But just on that, one last thing is, as I was walking in, I just had the iPad open on the desk to watch all the coverage, and Spieth hit a drive. And the last words I heard, it was wild. And it was Ewan Murray saying, the worrying thing for Spieth is that didn't bounce. So that just went into some crap. And, you know, that I agree. I think that is the worry with Spieth, that he throws in the quadruple bogey. Paul Laurie was on Sky Sports and he was saying the one big difference from Birkdale in 08 when Harrington won with Birkdale in 2017 is that you can get out of the rough. You can reach the greens from the rough, whereas in Birkdale in 08, quite often you were taking a wedge and chipping out sideways or just bumping it back on. But he was saying you can get out of that rough. Now, maybe the weather changes that.
Does that then diminish the impact of the driving stat in terms of, like, he might be 121st, but that's based on fairways hit, where it becomes less important to hit the fairway
potentially? But I'm sure you can still find a big number out there on the wrong shot, the wrong hole. But I think it does potentially. I think that plays into Spieth's favour a little bit. I mean, if we were talking about a course here where you can't get out of the rough, US Open style, you'd be a bit more worried about it. Speaking of US Open, Brooks Koepka started well.
Yeah, and I read a preview yesterday where somebody was tipping up one of the forgotten major winners.
Yeah.
It was like Brooks Koepka. He was the last major
winner.
It was only a month ago.
Yeah.
I don't think he's played since.
No, he hasn't.
But he's turned up and he's delivering again. But you just watch Spieth, even this morning, you get that buzz straight away when you see that it's on and that he's on.
Yeah.
And even, he hasn't played since the Travelers. So his last shot coming into this was the shot out of the bunker to win the playoff. In that tournament, in the tournament beforehand, he was a bit wild off the tee, but somehow he finds a way to get it up and down.
It's so exciting to watch. It's just amazing to watch him do it.
He's amazing.
You just can't understand when people go, he just doesn't have the personality.
They don't watch golf. They don't watch golf.
Hang on, they're saying Spieth doesn't have the personality.
A lot of people think Spieth is a bit
oodles
boring.
Oodles of personality.
No. Let's not worry about those people.
No.
They're not friends of the pod. They're not listening to this. I just don't think people who watch golf regularly could think Spieth is boring to watch.
You couldn't watch the 2015 official film of the Open and think Spieth is boring.
No.
Well, even today, I mean, several times Ewan Murray said, or Butch said, we don't need to commentate when Spieth's hitting. Because he tells you what's happening.
Greller. He's brilliant.
Like, that needs to go. That needs to go.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Even today. Yeah. So, look, that's the good news. Spieth has rocked up and he's ready to play. Justin Rose, 1998, Birkdale, we mentioned already, the chip in an 18th. Masters runner-up.
The last Englishman to win, though, Nick Faldo, 92.
Sure. So Rose is probably about their best chance, England's best chance.
Yeah, Tommy Fleetwood has started really slow.
I'd give Rose a better chance than Fleetwood, personally.
Lee Westwood, obviously, is due one. Yeah. There was stories in the paper this morning about, obviously, the big news about Westwood is the split with Chubby.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Oh, no, what?
Nothing.
So
It seems a holistic interest.
This was Charlie Sale in the Daily Mail, who very salacious. There's so many good bits. Come on, you read it every day. Do you not?
No.
Well, I love it.
So what's the gossip on
that? During the divorce proceedings for Westwood, his lawyers were going through the accounts of ISM.
Yeah.
And obviously something was up to do with one of the horses they owned, that maybe Westwood hadn't got all that was due from one of the horses they owned.
Uh-oh.
And like, it broke down over something as simple as that.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
But maybe that was a straw that broke the camel's back. No, but you know what I mean? They've been together, what, 30 years, 25 years, whatever it is.
Yeah.
20 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chubby's made his money out of them.
Chubby's done well out of that, yeah. So Rose, watching this morning, looked okay. He said coming into the tournament, I'm playing at 6 out of 10, and I'm seeing some glimpses of 9 out of 10. Now, I must say, he must have been showing those glimpses when I was watching him at the Irish Open, because I thought it was 9 out of 10.
That was amazing.
But
I thought so.
6 out of 10 is what he says.
Pete Cowan said ahead of, was it the Irish Open, or maybe just ahead of some of the links play over the last couple of years, that Justin Rose's problem on the links course is he can't but help himself but hit it as high as he possibly can.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Hey, did you see
winds? Today, by the way, I mean, very gentle day.
It's going to get softer again.
Forecast all wrong. Now, the forecast tomorrow is for, at its worst, mid-morning, which is when, you know, a lot of McIlroy and Phil and these boys going out this evening will be out there. It's going to be 40 mile an hour winds, which is scary. So, but I mean, they could get that wrong again. We don't know.
Sorry, just to go back to Rose for a second. Did you see the interview that he gave? Fairly kind of long interview. And he talked about how he felt about going back to Birkdale. Yeah. And he made a point. He said in 2008, he didn't enjoy it at all. And that the experience of 98 was sullied by turning pro and the horrors, the 2 years of horror. And so they were all kind of wrapped up into one thing. So he says, there's enough time has gone by now. I've accomplished a lot more, obviously. And so this is the first time you can go back to Birkdale free of all of the baggage. Mm. That was very interesting. I thought he spoke very well about it. And it was very insightful. Yeah. And it kind of gave the sense where we all look, the amateur that chipped in, finished third or fourth or whatever he finished. And in Rose's mind, it's not a good experience for him.
I guess when you miss 21 cuts straight away afterwards.
Pretty much, yeah.
It probably and is also, almost embarrassing for you.
And there was a sense of that the media turned on him, that he was in a very lonely place, that like there was a sense
he was
of,
built up. Like, yeah. I'd imagine the week after finishing fourth in the Open, the bet,
future.
You could go down to the bookies and how long until Justin Rose is the world number one.
Yeah. And he got a ton of invites, naturally, to big events, and then
stunk out the joint.
Really, yeah. So, but Rose, a good first round today, under par, went well. So Koepka's gone well, and we haven't really mentioned Sergio. He's had two runner-up finishes. He's almost like a top 10 machine at the Open.
Yeah.
And you presume he's feeling good about life. Going to get
and he can also, he's
shortly.
Got the money to buy to hire a wedding planner. So this idea that he's going to be distracted by his wedding, no.
Are people saying that?
They're saying he could be distracted by his wedding.
I think he'll be okay.
I think so too.
I backed Sergio in the end.
I couldn't
decide between him and Spieth, and it was just, he's played nicely since the Masters, and now that that's off his back, as you say, his record at the Open, except for having a win, is better than anybody in the field.
Well, he's 18-1. I tell you who's not 18-1 is Rory McIlroy at 20-1. Now, this is one of those potential points. We won't dwell on Rory too much, because you're probably listening to this, and you know how he's gone today, so 20-1, he was talking yesterday in his press conference about how he's feeling coming into this tournament.
Yeah, look, it's been a very stop-start year. You know, it hasn't been the year that I had planned. You know, going back to January and feeling like I was in a good place in my game. But, you know, these things sort of crop up out of nowhere and they challenge us. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I'm you know, sticking to what I know, which is working hard on my game and trying to, you know, feeling like I'm doing the right things and just trying to stay as patient as possible and enjoy the process of, you know, of trying to improve and trying to get better and trying to prepare for tournaments and hit the shots that I'm going to need for that week. And hasn't quite happened for me over the past couple of weeks, but, you know, it doesn't feel that far away. So, and because I haven't played that much, the only thing I can really do is take some sort of confidence from what I'm seeing in practice. And sometimes that doesn't quite translate to what happens on the course. And that's sort of been the case for the last few months. But obviously it's been hard to get any sort of momentum with an injury and not being able to practice as much as you'd like. So, but no, I'm in good spirits. I feel like it's all coming together, and I'm just waiting for that round or that moment or that week where it sort of clicks and I'll be off and running. You know, I've had little periods like this before in my career, and I've been able to bounce back from them. And I'd say I was in worse positions than this. I feel like my games, and you know, it's all, the pieces are all there. It's just about trying to fit them together. Yeah, I'm happy with what I have in the bag. Yeah, I went through a few putters a couple of weeks ago in Connecticut, and feel like I've landed on one that I like and I'm comfortable with. And at the end of the day, I mean, the putter's only 2% of what it is. 98% is the guy that's holding it. So yeah, I've done a good bit of work on it, and I feel like I'm. There's a little more flow to my putting than there might have been a few weeks ago, just by trying to separate my technical thoughts on the golf course to, you know, doing my drills off it. But when I get on the course, just really getting into trying to hole putts and not think too technically about it, and really focus in on the target and be a little bit more reactive. So I've worked a bit on that, which has been pretty good. I saw some good signs with how I putted last week in Scotland. So, yeah, and then I've put a 1-iron in the bag, which I'll hit a lot this week. It's 16 degrees with a graphite shaft. If calm conditions with a bit of run, it probably runs out to 280 or 290. So it's a great club to have this week. I feel like this is a golf course where you can't really take it on too much. You can't cut it across corners. You can't take on some of the angles or some of the bunkers that are out here. It really is. This golf course sort of dictates to you how you play it. You have to, because it's so well bunkered, it's so well designed. You hit it to, you know, you're going to see guys hitting it to the same spot and then hitting it from there to the green. And it is, it's one of those courses where, you know, you go out here this week and shoot 468s or 469s, and you're right there. You're going to win. You're going to have a really good chance to win. So you don't have to take on too much in this golf course, especially the first 14 holes where there isn't a par 5. You know, you've got the fifth hole, which is a very gentle par 4, but apart from that, there's no real obvious birdie holes. You know, you just have to play really good golf, and it gives you a little bit of a chance on the way in. So you know, that 1-iron will be hit a lot, and just trying to put myself in position off the tee, and then, you know, if you're in the fairway most of the time, you can attack some of these flags.
So there's Rory. He always talks a good game. Everybody talks a good game coming into tournaments, really. I mean, it took me about 5 years to realise Tiger Woods was lying all that time pre-tournament. He did say, interestingly, he was doing a quick piece with the BBC on Tuesday or Wednesday, and he was saying, you know, the injury is restricting him. It's the first time he's really fessed up about that. Like, he was saying, he hit balls for an hour and a half on Monday or Tuesday night and was quite sore the next day. Had to stop that night. And he said, look, I'm okay to play today. You know, the next morning I'm fine. But I felt it. So it's one of the reasons he's not sharp. And Jay Townsend on the BBC, who's really, like, he's a brilliant analyst on Five Live, was saying he watched every single shot Rory hit at the Irish Open and the Scottish Open. And he was saying that he's, like, miles off. And he's not even starting his iron shots out on the right line. So he said he just can't see Rory doing anything at this tournament. Now, there are people listening to this on Friday morning after Rory's shot a 62 laughing. And I accept that is possible, but it's just hard to see it right now. Even at 20-1, I looked at young Rory and I thought, no.
We almost need to get to the stage where we park everything Rory has done and we just analyse him now, because there's almost a fear of analysing Rory that he is going to ram it down your throat next week and you look like an absolute idiot for writing him off.
Yeah.
But every single expert you listen to, from Jay Townsend, from McGinley worrying about his putter, from all the analysts on Sky, suggests that this is by far the biggest dip in his career.
Yeah.
By far the most worrying dip in his career. Now, I know in 2014, or maybe it was 2012, he had a terrible summer and he missed the cut here, there and everywhere, and then he rocked up and he won the USPGA and won a couple more tournaments and all that sort
That's
of
right,
stuff.
Yeah.
But there just seems to be a far greater issue that he's not putting well, and his overall game is just rusty.
Yeah. His best finish is a playoff defeat at the beginning of the year in the South African Open,
which was a terrible field.
Yeah.
And he started tampering with his equipment. That was pre really messing around with the equipment and pre the injury.
Yeah.
So you know, that's Rory. I did genuinely think he putted better at the Scottish Open. I watched him for about 2 hours on the Friday, and he held some really good putts.
He's gone back to the Scotty, hasn't he?
Really good par saves.
I couldn't tell. I mean, just looked at the blade of the.
So he's gone back to it. So what he went with at the Irish Open, I think, was the. It's, so it's still a tailor-made putter, but
oh,
it is,
but it's with the flat rather than the spider one.
It's as close as you can get to a Scotty without it being a.
Okay, so he's
Scotty.
Gone to his like yeah
his blade
yeah
all the good memories. So that's Rory. Ian Poulter's worth the. I go with Poulter. He was in good form today, and he's finished off reasonably well. What did he finish up on?
67, 3 under par, okay. 22 yeah. putts.
Okay.
Which for Poulter is everything, because he made his name as a brilliant putter, and it's yeah. just fallen off the face of the earth. It's 5 years since he last won a tournament.
Wow.
And he's clearly collapsed down the world rankings. Hasn't played in any of the last five majors. That's how difficult it's got
yeah.
for Ian Poulter. And we know the way that there was some sort of a glitch in the system that got him his PGA Tour card back. Now yeah. he's taken full advantage. He played really well at the Players. He was brilliant this morning.
Was he?
Just smart. Just like we're talking about Spieth. Seemed to pick the right club
yeah.
for every hole off the tee.
I think he was close to runner-up in 08 at Berkshire.
He was runner-up, yeah. yeah. Now again, 08, that's why I wonder, depending on the conditions, how different this week is to 08. He was 7 over par. Finished second, sure. 4 shots yeah.
different
behind. He started yes. the final day on 10 over par.
Shit, the weather. He really good, solid, very solid. What is it? He was 3 under, 2 under back nine, front nine, then one single birdie, but no mistakes on the back. So very solid round. Although it's 215, and Spieth has just gone to 5 under.
Okay, here's what Ian Poulter was saying after his round.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, Birkdale 9 years ago felt pretty good on Sunday afternoon, and you know, it felt just as good today. You know, looking how I played really well. You know, I would have taken that before going out. Obviously, it was raining. You know, as we started to warm up, first thing, the wind stayed there at a constant 15 mile an hour. But I hit all the shots I wanted to hit. I played careful on a few holes for obvious reasons. You don't hit it in some of those cross bunkers. So I. You know, I committed to a lot of shots. There's one or two I'd like to have another go at, and you know, a couple of putts slipped by the edge of the hole. But you know, it adds up to a decent score. I'm pretty happy.
If I just read you the favourites and the betting as things stand, or actually not as things stand, this was last night, so the night before the first round. So it's interesting. I don't know what price Brooks Koepka was, but he wasn't inside 25 to 1, because the betting last night on the website I was looking at was Spieth at 12 to 1. By the way, 12 to 1 is as big as a favourite has ever been in a yeah. major in recent
and that,
times.
And Spieth came in over the last couple of days. Yeah. On Monday, I think there was 3 joint favourites at 16 to 1.
Okay.
Which were Spieth, Fowler and Dustin Johnson.
It just shows none of the top players are coming in good form. Like, usually a favourite for a major
8 to 1.
7-8 to 1, yeah. So it just shows that collectively the world's best players aren't playing well. But it was Spieth last night. Ricky Fowler and Dustin Johnson were joint second favourites around 14s. John Rahm, Sergio and Justin Rose were all about 18. McIlroy 20, and it was Tommy Fleetwood and Matsuyama, my good friend.
Sure,
Matsuyama
Hideki.
Yeah. I had a chat with him.
Would you like?
So there was no Koepka there. So I don't know. Is there anyone else there we want to mention? Justin yeah. Johnson was in the Sky zone, and he was saying it's the first week that he's been able to kind of swing like he was swinging pre-Masters. He feels properly over the injury now.
Yeah. He wasn't very interesting, was he, compared to the others?
You know, it's Justin Johnson.
I know.
It's almost
I
interesting.
I just hit a regular shot.
It's almost interesting how
interesting. How uninteresting he is, yeah.
Yeah.
But Adam Hadwin is my, on that Sky, kind of, I watched him, I fell in love with him.
Didn't see.
Was it his beard? Does he still have the beard?
Yeah. He was just brilliant. I mean, so many of them are brilliant, but he was fantastic. Sorry, I'm distracting you from the.
If Dustin
John
Johnson,
Rahm,
if yeah, well, I've got a clip of John Rahm here. If Dustin Johnson is back to the pre-Masters form, then he'll run away with this thing.
Or do you think so?
Well, it'll be him and Spieth, and I guess it depends how Ricky Fowler goes as well. But I mean, you have to cast your minds back when we were going to the Masters. Dustin Johnson felt unbeatable. He was that good this year,
but it moves quickly.
It sure does. It sure does.
No, he has shown so. Royal St. George 2011,
yeah.
when he blew it. He got himself into the position to blow it on a week where the wind really did blow.
Yeah, yeah. 14th, it was when he flared that one out of bounds and really killed himself.
There's no hard and fast rule, but generally if the weather blows, it increases the likelihood of that kind of outlier winner. So it's hard to predict. Like, if it is, turns up, if it is 40 miles an hour tomorrow, that could eliminate all of the top guys going out this afternoon or put them seriously out of running.
It's so fickle though, the weather. Yeah. Even looking at it this morning when I got up, so that's when, say, O'Meara was having his eight.
Yeah.
Like that first 90 minutes, it looked as though it was going to be 2008 type scoring. But then the rain stopped, the wind just died, the course was nice and soft. And then you wonder, the guy's going out this afternoon, if there's no more rain, is it going to dry out completely? Are the greens suddenly going to be a whole lot faster? Like, is speed out there in peak conditions for somebody who's such a good putter as him?
Yeah.
Like, Rory's not going out till around about now, maybe about 3 o'clock. He's not going to be finishing up till half seven this evening.
Yeah, they're long days at the Open, aren't they? Yeah. And by the way, John Rahm, so we mentioned him, he was one of the, he's one of the favourites. Now, he was one of the favourites going into the US Open and missed the cut. So 18 to 1 going into this Irish Open winner. Here's what Rahm was saying about the whole Lynx experience.
I did say a lot of times in Ireland that I had not played my best golf in the Lynx golf course yet. Obviously, if it's not my best, it was really close to my best that week. To shoot the score that I did, especially the final round, it was impressive. So it does give me a little bit of confidence. You know, I can read the greens. Me and Adam interpreted the wind properly. I'm hitting it properly to, you know, have my ball perform in the wind. So obviously I take a lot of positives from that week that I'm going to be able to apply this week. The two courses are a little bit different. It's obviously within Lynx Golf, they're a little bit different styles. But nonetheless, it gives me a lot of confidence just because of what I just said, right? I've had problems before in the past with like spinning the ball too much, not being able to control the distances, not being able to control my trajectory properly. And last, you know, in Ireland, my iron play was really superb. Like, I haven't hit the ball that good in a very long time. And then on top of that, I was able to roll the putt in a good line and read the breaks properly. So that obviously gives a lot of confidence coming to a week like this.
John Rahm there. Got to have a chance if he puts as well as he did.
Did you see him do the bunker shots?
Mm. Oh, my God. Yeah. With Andrew Coulthard.
That was amazing.
The four iron.
Really impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you can hit aces. I can hit any club out of there just for fun.
Do you know what's funny? Like, so I find the pros almost unrelatably good in pretty much every aspect of their game, right? The way they drive the ball, the way they crush their irons, the way they putt, everything. The way they chip. But like on your best day, hitting your greatest ever shot, you can kind of see, that felt good. The one aspect of golf I just can't even begin to relate to them is the bunker play.
You're just happy to get it out.
I just get it out. Like, I'm a 13 handicapper, bang average, but just, and I feel like I can chip well. Like, I can flop a shot out of grass. I'm very comfortable doing that. But there's something about bunkers, and look, I've watched every video. I know how you do it. Don't tell me how you do it. I know how you do it. I don't know, is it the quality of bunkers I play in, but what they can do out of bunkers,
it's amazing.
I just look at it, I can't even begin to imagine.
I like the way you just said, I don't know if it's the quality of bunkers I play out of.
But did you see the Friday
the issue is the sand, Joe. It's the quality of sand isn't to your liking.
Well, there are, like, I played St. Anne's, and I'm playing it tomorrow as well, because I love Lynx so much at the moment. In those bunkers, Lynx bunkers, the sand was very consistent, and I definitely got a feel for it then.
Right.
But I just find, you know, throw me in whatever parkland course we rock up on tee times or playing different ones different times, I just have no clue what I'm doing. No consistency to how it's coming out.
Did you see him hit the plug lie shot out of the bunker?
Yeah.
He hit it to whatever, like a foot.
Yeah. So, okay, last word on this then, because there's a few other bits to talk about. The Irish Challenge. Harrington, obviously, you know, it would be a dream, but it who knows? Look, I'm not even writing him off. And then Larry has started okay.
He was level par through 12 last we saw.
That's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
Yes. Look, if Spieth gets in there with a 65, that's set up the week.
Mm.
Well, we're laughing now all the way through till Sunday, because you'd assume he's not going to just fade away, particularly with the forecast.
Yeah.
It should be in his favour.
Yeah. Okay. There's some early thoughts on day one of the Open. So the TV coverage then. The Sky TV coverage. I appreciate it's a pity it's not terrestrial. BBC, when Rory won in 2014, had 5 million people watching, whereas Stenson Mikkelsen last year had 1.1 million watching. So, you know, that is not good. The other side of the coin, though, is you've had these 2 or 3 days of wall-to-wall coverage from the course, which has been just a joy. Like, it's the best insight we get to these players, that Sky Zone, where the players, they really do seem more than happy to come over and do their 5 minutes. And I think it's just fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's been the success story. But even us avid golf fans, it's very easy to get tired of overhyped events, even one as big as the Open. And yet, okay, so if you're a not golf fan, you look and you go, oh, Jesus, the Open. I can't. But the biggest success story is how the producers figured out this is the way to relate. You get the players over, yeah. and the players, almost to a man, are incredibly good at understanding what their role is, that they have to give a little, they have to emote, be personable. And when you're asked about a shot, don't just go, oh, I just hit the shot. Break it down. And none better, of course, than Harrington, who can break things. I mean, you made a point yesterday, Joe, that I thought was very good, that of Harrington's many, many skills is his ability to talk and never dump things down, which I thought, and I was watching it back and I was thinking, yeah, that's exactly right. He just says what it is without feeling that he's condescending to anybody. And if you get it, you get it. And if you don't, but you do get it.
Yeah, never dumbs things down, even when it's a kid asking him a question. Yeah. The Sky Zone, he just gives the same answer he would.
Oh, well, the Sky presenters were just walking off after the second question with Harrington because he was about 6 minutes into the answer to a question he had no longer been asked.
It went back to Sarah Sturck and Rich Beam, and as with the Irish Open all week and the Scottish Open, they were just saying, he's amazing.
He's amazing. Although amazing. They did say one thing, is like, someone said, oh, he's quirky. And I'm like, he's not quirky.
I know what they mean, though.
I know what you mean, but it's just like, you know what? He's the most refreshing, honest thing.
Have you seen his swing?
Yeah, I know.
Quirky, fair enough. Yeah. They were all really good. Like, the real benefit is you get such an insight into their games. Like, say, Alex Noren, someone that you wouldn't know anything about. You now know after watching it, and two, three, 4 minutes, that Noren, as a kid, hooked the ball to get that extra distance. And in recent times, he's gone to the fade. It's taken a huge amount of work. He over-exaggerates the over-the-top fade movement. And then he punches some shots out and you get to see the flight with the tracker.
Mm.
And in 4 or 5 minutes now, you've such an understanding of Noren that you could watch Noren in the next 5 tournaments and you'd learn more from those 4 or 5 minutes with him in the Sky Zone. You know, you wouldn't know for sure what shot shape he's playing just from watching a standard tournament or what he's thinking. Thought Lee Westwood really good again.
Yeah. And they make use of their time. Yeah. So like, it's perfect for me who doesn't work, say, on a Monday and Tuesday. I would just flick on Sky Sports Golf, as it is now, or Sky Sports News, and suddenly you've got Harrington or McGinley or somebody really interesting at 3 o'clock on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah.
Looking ahead, rather than what we were getting, which was maybe a half-hour highlights package preview show on the Wednesday night. We don't know anything about any of these players. It's quite incredible with all of this that the organisations are turning their back on Sky.
Mm. That's the big news this week. Yeah, the USPGA have decided that BBC is the route forward.
Yeah, so we knew that Sky were losing the PGA. The assumption was that it would just be on social media, that it would be live on Twitter more than likely, maybe Facebook as well. But it seems as though that they have gone in with the BBC, and possibly the Masters may return to the BBC as well, because Sky don't have that nailed down.
Wow.
As of yet, right. Which is obviously a huge blow to Sky, considering they literally just launched Sky Golf this week. Now, maybe the fact they've lost this means they go in twice as heavy. Again, I'm putting a lot of stock in what Charlie Sale was writing, but he does hang around in the right corridors at these big events. So he was saying that Sky are basically blaming it all on agents IMG, that they've shown the PGA for the last 10 years, expected it to be a pretty straightforward conversation, but they were... IMG were demanding that Sky double their money.
Wow.
Sky would not be held to ransom, leading to the BBC picking up a one-year deal for a minimal amount of money.
Wow.
IMG are hoping to recoup the deficit from social media.
Oh, wow. Do you think, just asking, you know, no question too dumb, your point about that viewership, that invariably with a subscription model you get fewer viewers, golf is worried about dwindling numbers, so going back to terrestrial is a way of getting more people watching? Is that an issue? I mean, I know money
but
in the end.
But this is the conundrum that faces, but maybe golf more than most sports, but all sports of, so you see the route Sky are going down where they have a specific channel for golf, where golf nuts will pay that little bit extra to be able to see every tournament. Yeah. And that's the thing, you want to, if you're paying for Sky Golf, you want everything. You don't need to pay for...
We must talk about that, by the way, at a later date to see what they're going to fill up all that airtime with.
Yeah, but... So, but the issue then is, well, from your point of view, all that, how you make sure enough people are interested, how new people get interested if they can't see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And catch 22.
Exactly. But what Sky offer, and particularly even already from the PGA, are going... Like, there was talk that the World Athletic Championships are on the same week. As the USPGA, the BBC also have the rights for the World Athletics Championship, that some of it might be on the red button.
Mm.
It's like, no, I want the red button to be able to watch anybody on the course that I want to watch, not to just see one feed.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I think this is a bad move. Like, I'm not glad to see it go from Sky, I think, actually, because really won me over in the last year or two. Like, really won me over what they're doing. They're really trying, and it's, I mean, the stuff,
I think it's been brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
You just can't fault it. Is Monty definitely doing US TV? Do we know that for a fact?
Or I have no idea.
Has he just been binned?
I'm just going with the Nathan Murphy comment from...
No, somebody tweeted in to say he was on American
Masters,
TV.
Yeah.
So I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. We pretty much have to get out of here, do we?
Yeah. Okay. We shouldn't wrap up, though, without a few words from our good friend, Gary Player.
Okay.
So the Golf Writers Awards were on the eve of the Open Championship. Justin Rose was given an award because he's so helpful with the press. So basically they're acknowledging the players who are most helpful and stop and do all the right things. Gary Player was there and he was invited up to say a few words about the late, great Arnold Palmer. He could only respond, though, by talking about himself.
Oh, no, Gary.
With the stories. And if you're looking, we should put up the link. Small Talk in The Guardian this week is with Gary Player. Finally, Gary, do you have one piece of advice for Small Talk? Gary Player. Retirement is a death warrant. I'm 82. Look at this. Oh, smack's own chest with a force that would reduce Small Talk to a snivelling wreck. Another smack. Small Talk would now be out like a spark on the floor. I still work as hard as I do at 82 as I did at 25. If you stop working, you're going to die.
And so Player never mentioned that Palmer more or less saved the Open.
I don't have the exact transcript, but it seems not.
I was only reading about it. I didn't fully appreciate
1960.
That Palmer playing in 1960, because Americans just wouldn't play. No. Ben Hogan played one, and never played again.
No, 100%.
Yeah.
Palmer, and it was such a... But he then went back in 61, won it again.
That's right.
And I think he won it again, either the year after the year after that. But, Palmer going in 60.
And introduces the idea of the Grand Slam.
Brought world attention to
everything. Yeah. I mean... When I read it, I was like, yeah, but I didn't fully appreciate
it. No, yeah, totally did. It's worth talking about another time. We're pretty much done. We'll try, obviously, do a bumper Open review next week, which will play more into our strengths as a podcast time-wise. So we'll do that next week. Enjoy it. Good luck. All my exes were